Thank you. I'd like to thank Mildred for inviting me to speak today and look forward to sharing some information about our lead poisoning prevention program at the City of Cincinnati. Cincinnati is a very poor city. It's 44% minority. It's one, it has among the top three cities of its size for poverty level, and we have had a very high lead problem. You know that lead poisoning is one of the most common environmental diseases in children, can cause lifelong disability, and is completely preventable. And particularly for young children, when they start crawling on the floor and putting their hands in their mouths, if you have dust that's contaminated with lead, there's a high probability that the children will ingest the lead, and it can affect their development, particularly the nervous development. We know that IQ can be decreased, and people have quantified that about 1 microgram per deciliter increase in blood lead level yields a quarter of a unit decrease in IQ. And there are other difficulties that have been associated with lead poisoning. At the higher levels, lead poisoning can be associated with things like anemia, kidney problems, impaired hearing, death. But at lower levels, we know that there is actually no safe level of lead, and people have identified learning disabilities and developmental delay, even for levels that are that used to be considered high normal. Blood test is really the only way to know if a child has lead poisoning, because lead at the lower levels does not cause symptoms. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Program in Cincinnati. Tell you a little bit about an innovative program when it started that now is pretty much the standard. Cincinnati in Ohio tests more children than most major cities, but even though we test more than most major cities, we found that we're not testing very many of our children. In an analysis that I'm not presenting today that we did looking at eligible children who should be tested, because children should be tested at age 1 and age 2 for lead, we found that about anywhere from 28 to 38% of the eligible children were tested, looking at various zip codes within the city. So most children who are eligible to be tested for lead are not being tested. It's an environmental justice issue because it does overwhelmingly occur for children of low-income families and low-income neighborhoods. And particularly in Cincinnati, we know that two of our zip codes accounted for almost 50% of the childhood lead poisoning cases. We know that that before 2011, the level of lead for lead poisoning was generally agreed to be 10 micrograms per deciliter or higher. But that the CDC changed and put out guidelines suggesting a 5 microgram per deciliter blood lead threshold for young children as a new reference level. And they say it's a reference level because that's the 97th percentile for blood lead in children aged 1 to 5 years in an analysis, the NHANES survey. With new analyses, as we bring blood lead down, the 95th percentile will change, and they'll be lowering the reference level accordingly. And the purpose is that because there's no safe lead level, if you identify children with low level lead exposure, you may be able to decrease further disability, even for children at those levels. I'm going to show a couple of quick slides just showing, you know, lead paint in various stages of chipping and peeling and deterioration. Everybody has seen it. Most homes that were painted before 1978 have lead paint in them, and when the paint starts disintegrating or deteriorating, that's when you can generate lead dust. Friction surfaces are particularly of importance. Things like window sashes and jams, doors, floors and stairs, railings, that sort of thing. And also dust created during renovation can contain lead. And so these are just, everybody's seen these, probably lead. Lead can be in the soil, especially if exterior paint flakes chip into the soil or flake off into the soil. Lead will stay in the soil for a very long time. And so one of the things that's actually not being looked at is the problem of lead-contaminated soil and that association with childhood lead poisoning. Particularly in Cincinnati, we're doing a lot of demolition, if you do renovations, you're supposed to do it lead safe. If you do demolitions, you just haul the timber away and leave the lead. Nobody has to do anything. And so that's an unnoticed or unaddressed problem that's going to be in a lot of the cities. Lead can be in imported candy and wrappers. Lead can be in imported jewelry and ceramics and toys. And sometimes our lead program will actually test toys before Christmas time for people to see whether there's lead in the toy they're about to give their children. And lead can be, children can get lead exposure from their parents' occupations and hobbies. And so people who are in these occupations may bring lead dust or home on their work clothes and actually poison their children. So CDC came out with their guidelines in 2011. The Ohio Department of Health issued their mandate for changing the level of lead to 5 in November of 2014. And as soon as you change the legal level for lead poisoning, you drastically increase the number of cases that local health departments have to work with. But we didn't get any increased resources to work with these increased number of lead cases. And so what I'm talking about is a program that we actually had started before the CDC changed their the reference level for lead to impact kids with low-level lead exposure. Then we called it primary prevention, and we're calling it treating lead poisoning children. This is just an overview of the Cincinnati Lead Poisoning Prevention Program. There's four components of what the program does. For children who have blood lead levels greater than 10, we're still doing the interviews and the lead risk assessment. But for children who have blood lead levels 5 to 9, we're sending nurses out to the homes of these families, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. We also are lucky in Cincinnati to have HUD grant funds to provide assistance to homeowners to make make homes lead safe. So when we find that a child has a blood lead level between 5 and 9. We're sending a nurse out to the family to provide two face-to-face visits to the child, including the evaluation of the developmental stage, and then intensive education about potential sources of exposure to lead, ways to clean to decrease lead exposure in the home, environmental controls, nutrition to decrease the chance of absorption of lead if the child ingests it. And then for families that would not allow the home visits, we would provide literature about lead poisoning. And then all families were encouraged to retest their child after 90 days to see whether the lead level was changing. This is a slide that documents three things, and this light blue thing is the number of children tested for lead, which has been increasing from 1990 to the present time. So we're testing more children. We're finding that the percent prevalence of lead poisoning, both for 10 and above and 5 and above, has decreased over time. It's decreased drastically for the 5 and above over time. This is data that's coming basically from, that's reported out through the State Health Department. These data are based on the first blood lead test in a year for children. And so, what we were interested in seeing, though, is that because those tests are not tracking children, through time, we wanted to take the children who had a first blood lead level 5 to 9 and sort of track them through time to see if their risk of progressing to a higher blood lead level changed in the time period after we started our nurse intervention, which was mid-2007. Basically, we got all the lead tests on all the kids in Cincinnati from 2000 to 2013. That was about 30,000 blood lead test results, and then we aggregated them by child ID, sorted by date, and then looked at the whether the first blood lead test was 5 to 9. As I mentioned again that most children are not actually getting tested, but of those who get tested, we found that only one-fifth get tested twice. And we also found that the retest rate was not really much higher for those whose blood lead level was 5 to 9 compared to, people who are 0 to 4. So what this is showing, this is basically the age at the first blood lead test 2000 to 2012, unique children in Cincinnati. You're supposed to be tested at year one and year two. Only one quarter of the children who actually were tested had gotten their blood test by first year of age, 55% by the second year of age. So children are not getting tested. If they're getting tested late. This slide just shows, sorry, the distribution. And so what you can see is that over the entire time period, about 20% of children had platelet levels in the 5 to 9 for the first platelet level. Of those who had a second platelet level, there was only 6,600 of them. And the distribution was a little bit higher for kids with high platelet levels, but you know, these are not linked. These statistics are not linked. When we look at children with high initial platelet levels 5 to 9 before mid-2007 and after mid-2007, mean age was more than 2 years. We had about equal distribution, males and females. We had a slightly higher proportion of black children compared to the percentage black in Cincinnati, which is like 44%. And the mean initial platelet level was in this around 6 for all of them. This split here is just because at the last minute, we went back and we're redocumenting who had the actual face-to-face versus nurse visit versus who had literature. Anecdotally, we think most of these folks had the first nurse visit, but when we went back to double check, some of the records were not well documented, and so this is why this is sort of split. But you know, our information from the nurses was that when they mailed literature, very little of the literature came back, and that most of the children after 2007 actually had the face-to-face visit. So the Ohio Department of Health recommends that children with platelet level greater than 5 get a platelet level retested at 90 days. Most children who had initial platelet level 5 to 9 did not have a repeat test at all. Of those who did have a repeat test, a greater proportion of them had it after we started our intervention than before, only 10% before versus one-third afterwards. And the time lag between the first platelet and the second platelet level was much shorter after the nurse intervention began. It's like 275 down here for after the intervention. So we were able to get kids tested sooner, but 275 is not 90 days after the first platelet test. And then we looked to see whether or not the risk of any follow-up platelet level being 10 after they had the nurse intervention having any platelet level 10 or greater after they first had a platelet level 5 to 9 changed before our intervention started and after our intervention started. And we did see a significant difference in terms of less chance of having a child progress to a platelet level 10 or higher after the nurse intervention started compared to before. So in conclusion, we know that the decreasing the reference level to 5 from 10 increased the number of childhood lead poisoning cases, legal cases, and that health departments can't take care of all those increased number of cases with full case management and lead risk assessment. A lead risk assessment in a home takes about 4 hours, and if you have to go to every place that a child has stayed for at least 6 hours in a week, then you can be going to multiple places for one child doing a lead risk assessment. We have seen that there's a decrease in the number, which I didn't show you, and the percent of tested children with a first platelet level 10 and above or 5 to 9, a decrease in the percent of children who progressed to a platelet level of 10 and above if they started out at 5 to 9. And we're finding that we're getting more kids to recheck their platelet levels and shortening the time. We looked at the actual change in platelet level, but because platelet follows a nonlinear course, you know, a timeline, when they first start crawling, their platelet levels go up, and then it starts coming down again after a while. And so if you're just checking someone, you know, if you check them along this timeline, if you check them you know, a year or 2 years or 3 years later, you're going to see a lower blood lead level anyway, if you, even if you don't do an interaction. And so we felt that the change in blood lead level was perhaps, I don't know how to say it, the interpretation was very difficult for change in blood lead level with the intervention because of the natural time course of blood lead. We think that the nurse intervention has helped in decreasing the blood lead levels in Cincinnati. We also have the HUD lead hazard control grant funding, and there's an effect of that in terms of changing the milieu of homes in the city to help decrease the blood lead levels. This is the staffing for the lead poisoning prevention program. We basically now have one public health nurse. We started out with two public health nurses in this program. One of our nurses passed. We have not been able to replace her. We have people, four licensed lead risk assessors doing assessment, and one nurse manager doing case management for 10 and above. And then we have the staffing for the grant program. And I'd like to acknowledge Casey Kotnick, who is a student who was supposed to be presenting this presentation, but who is in Bosnia. And the rest of the people here who have assisted in the analysis for this project. Thank you.